It is a privilege to speak tonight. Although normally my comfort zone is with little people, I consider it a privilege and want to use opportunities that I'm given to share things with other people. You're going to find that I'm not a deep theological speaker, but as I speak, hopefully I can be a blessing to you. My topic of the practical aspects of showing charity includes things I've learned from you people during my brief time of being a member of Tabernacle Baptist Church. It's kind of like preaching to the choir because I have learned a lot from you people. At the same time, I, and hopefully you too, need to be reminded of some things that can help us show charity to other people. A few months ago, the very first time I introduced myself to Mary, she said, "What do you like about Tabernacle?" Without hesitation, I said that it was a caring and compassionate pastor and also the people. And even though she'd been here a very, very short time, she did agree with me. When I think of charity, 1 Corinthians 13 is a chapter of the Bible that comes to mind. For the sake of time, we're not going to read that chapter now, but I encourage each one of you to frequently go through and read it. I have a plaque right at the entrance to my house that was given to me as a gift, and it quotes 1 Corinthians 13 on it. I need to look at that more often. I need to be reminded that I need to show charity in my home and to other people. When I first started studying for this presentation, I came across a quote that said, "Although people have different gifts, love is available to all of us." How true this is. We all look different, act different, have different likes, dislikes, abilities, gifts, but there is a common denominator. We all need love, and we need to show love to other people. As I speak, I'm going to use the words love and charity interchangeably. I recently talked to our friend Charity here at church and said, "How did you get your name?" And she said, "Well, my parents knew it was from the Bible, and they knew it meant love." I thought, what a sweet name. What a wonderful reason to have that name. Tonight, I'm going to do an acrostic using the letters of the word charity. And these letters are going to be a reminder of simple, practical ways that we can show charity to others. I have a new appreciation for our pastor as I'm preparing this because I found that there's so much I want to say and so little time. Each letter could be a lesson or a series of lessons in itself, but I am going to very briefly go over each one and hopefully we can glean things from it. The C in the acrostic stands for Christ's love. There are so many verses in the Bible that we could choose, but I've chosen the one that's probably one of the first verses we learn as a child or taught to our children, but it says it all. It's John 3:16. "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life." We've been taught in school that in a writing we should build up to a climax, but for the sake of this acrostic, we're going to start with the climax, with the ultimate love, which is Christ's love. God loved us so much that he sent his son Jesus to earth to eventually die on the cross for our sins. There is no greater love than this. When I was in college, many years ago, 6 months before I was going to be married, one of my class requirements in speech was to do a poetry program. For some strange reason, I chose to do my poetry program on the progression of love. It started with childhood love built up to what many people say is the ultimate, the wedding day, a man and a woman falling in love and getting married. And many people consider that the ultimate love. And it is a wonderful day. It should be a wonderful day. But as I said in my poetry program, there is a love far greater. It's the love of God. And I ended my poetry program with the words to that song. And I'll just share a few of them with you now. We need to listen to these words and see how awesome God's love is. Could we with ink the ocean fill? And were the skies of parchment made? Were every stock on earth a quill, and every man a scribe by trade? To write the love of God above would drain the ocean dry, nor could the scroll contain the whole, though stretched from sky to sky. Oh, love of God, how rich and pure, how measureless and strong! It shall forevermore endure the saints' and angels' song. How awesome God's love to us is. The H in charity stands for hospitality. 1 Kings chapter 4, verses 9 and 10 say, "And she said unto her husband, Behold, now I perceive that this is a holy man of God, which passes by us continually. Let us make a little chamber, I pray thee, on the wall, and let us set for him there a bed, and a table, and a stool, and a candlestick. And it shall be, when he cometh to us, that he shall turn in thither." What a great example of hospitality this is. This couple built a room for Elisha so that he had a special place to stay when he passed by. Not all of us are able to do this, but I'm reminded of just recently the Larsons knowing that the Allens had a need for a place to live. And they set to work and they finished their basement so that they could move in. Not all of us are able to do things like this, have the space to do things like this. But we need to remember that it is a blessing to our families to use opportunities to host missionaries, visiting speakers, Bible college teams in our homes. A few months ago, we had that opportunity when the women's soccer team from Maranatha passed through here. Some of those girls ended up on floors in homes, but that didn't matter. But to have them in our homes, to have our children exposed to godly examples, pays great dividends, and we need to use those opportunities. We have a New Testament example of hospitality, which we are familiar with. Luke 10, verses 39 through 42 mention this. I'm just going to share the last couple of verses of that portion. "And Jesus answered and said unto her, Martha, Martha, thou art careful and troubled about many things, but one thing is needful, and Mary hath chosen the good part, which shall not be taken away from her." Mary did the good part. She was fellowshipping with Jesus while he was in their home. Martha was too busy to enjoy visiting with Jesus. We can all make excuses for not having people in. Now, Martha had somebody in, but she had the wrong attitude. But we can use excuses for not showing hospitality in their homes. Lack of space, lack of lovely decor, lack of cooking ability, lack of money, or lack of time. These are all things to be considered. But let me give you another example. Right after we started coming to this church, we got invited to Mike Klickus's birthday party at their home. We'd never been to anyone's home. We got there. Mike ushered us into their living room of their small home, said, "Stand in this spot," and he said, "Okay, here's your tour. The kitchen's that way, the bathroom's that way, there's the bedrooms, and you're standing in the living room. That's your tour." The Klickuses continually praise God for providing that modest home for them. I was so impressed that night. There wasn't a half a dozen people there. There were over 100 people there at their home to celebrate Mike's birthday. They walked people in the back door, through the kitchen to pick up the food, out the living room door, and outside where they had a tent set up. It was a wonderful time. They didn't let their lack of space in their home keep them from entertaining over 100 friends, something that people who have large houses sometimes don't do. Cooking ability. In this day and age, with so many things ready, we don't really need to know how to cook. We can cook some pasta and throw on some spaghetti sauce for very economically. We don't have to splurge. Time is important to all of us. Some of us have more time than others. But we need to remember, people want and need fellowship more than fancy food and environment. Not at mealtime, but another. Invite people in the summer for a glass of cold water. Share a bowl of popcorn. Do things with other people. They want and need fellowship more than fancy things. The A in the word charity is one that may surprise you that I chose it. It's not one you usually associate with showing love. I chose this word several weeks ago before I knew that there was a new program coming out on television by the same name. I haven't seen the program. I probably won't watch the program, but I didn't steal the word from them. I did come up with it on my own, and the word is amnesia. And you go, amnesia? That is very strange. But I read in Hebrews 10:17 the verse that says, "Their sins and iniquities will I remember no more." I used to have an impeccable memory. I didn't forget a name. I didn't forget details. I didn't need to keep a calendar of events. It was all in my brain. A few years ago, before I started going through my chemo treatments, my sister said, "Wendy, you know it's going to kill some good cells as well as the bad." And I realized that quickly. Words don't come to me as quickly as they used to. Names, it's hard to remember. I've got a calendar. But one day I was really excited because on the news they said, there is such a thing called chemo brain, and it's a medically documented that, yes, it does affect memory. And people may think it's strange, but I told Laurel, I was so excited because it didn't mean that I was losing my memory from old age, that it was from chemo brain. So that's the excuse that I'm sticking with. But amnesia. We all think loss of memory is a bad thing. But referring to the verse that I read leads me to believe that forgetting some things, though it may be very difficult, forgetting some things is difficult but good. We've all been hurt. Family have hurt us. Friends have hurt us. Coworkers, bosses. Some of them even Christians. Christians hurt other Christians, believe it or not. I have been hurt badly in my lifetime. Give me a few hours. I could share many things, many hurts that I've suffered. But you know, using even one of these hurts as an illustration would only slow the process of forgetting. These are things I need to have amnesia for. I need to forget these hurts and move on with my life. A good example of the good kind of amnesia is from a book I read a few months ago. It was written by Steve Saint, whose father, Nate Saint, was among the missionaries years ago in Ecuador that was murdered by the natives there. Without even reading the book, I opened up and looked at the pictures on the inside, and I was rebuked but blessed by a picture I saw of Marge Saint arm in arm smiling with a native. But it wasn't any native warrior. It was the person that personally murdered her husband years ago. She stayed and labored there. These people began accepting Christ as their savior. This warrior got saved. She was able not only to forgive him, but to forget what he had done and to become close friends. Years later, Steve, the son of Nate Saint, went back and became good friends with this warrior. He even brought him back to the States, to what we call civilization, and the book does share some very humorous things that went on while they were together. But as I read these things, as I looked at the picture, I was rebuked in my life. I thought, Wendy, you've had words hurt you, you've had attitudes hurt you. You haven't gone through anything like what these people have, having their loved one murdered. And yet, the sweet attitude that they have is such an example to us. Of course, the best example, amnesia, again, is from Hebrews 10:17. Their sins and iniquities will I remember no more. God not only forgives and forgets my sins, every one of you, He forgives and forgets your sins, the sins of the whole world. We need to have amnesia and forget our hurts and wrongs that have been committed against us. The R in the acrostic stands for rejoice. 1 Corinthians 13:6 says, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in truth. We must first have a spirit that rejoices before we can be a blessing to others. Years ago, in another state, one of the first friends I made when I moved to Indiana was a friend named Linda. And we enjoyed being with them, but at the same time, this person had probably the most negative attitude of anyone I, up to then and since, have met in my life. Just a couple of examples. We went over there right after Christmas, and the house was filled with the gifts they'd received. She went around showing me each gift and telling me what was wrong with it. Yeah, he wanted that for Christmas, and he's playing with it today, but it'll probably be broken tomorrow. I don't know why my mother gave her that. She's not old enough for that. And then some was just, that's a stupid gift. And I left just almost wanting to cleanse myself. It was so hard to listen to all that. In that home, the father did have some health problems that kept him from getting and holding jobs. But one spring, she told me he'd gotten a new job. He was going to be a maintenance person in a large apartment complex, and one of the things he was going to be doing was cleaning the pool. And I said, oh, great, you get to go take the kids over there swimming. And she said, well, yeah, we can, but the weather probably won't be good enough to go. I thought, you've got a whole summer ahead of you, and you're telling me that there's not going to be one day that you can take the kids swimming. But that's the way she lived her life. She had was not able to rejoice in her situation, and therefore, to me and others, she wasn't able to be a blessing. Romans 12:15 says, rejoice with them that do rejoice, and weep with them that weep. And a lot of times we think that weeping with other people is probably the hardest, but many of us have a hard time rejoicing with those that rejoice. I remember a few weeks ago on a Sunday night, people started saying, hey, I got a review, and I just got an increase in my salary at work. And somebody else said, hey, I just got a raise too. And it was neat to rejoice with them, but it's very possible that somebody sitting in the congregation could have been going, it's been 5 years since I've had a raise. It's not fair. We need to rejoice with those that rejoice. Again, my friend Linda, one of the many examples of what I and other people went through was when our children were in first grade. At the end of the year, my son got a trophy that she thought her son should have gotten, and she reacted by not speaking to me, acting very angry with me. She told others that she was jealous, but the way she did that at that time and others, it was she would just close up and you'd have to say, did I offend you? No, you didn't offend me. But, you know, she could not rejoice in her own situation, and therefore she could not rejoice with others. A humorous little saying I saw recently said, Lord, if I can't be thin, please make my friends fat. This statement misses the mark. And where I work out, I recently heard it. One lady had lost some weight. She says, but I don't know who to tell. She says, my friends aren't losing weight, and they don't want to hear that I am. We need to rejoice with those that rejoice. In October of 2005, I heard words that no one wants to hear. you have cancer. I didn't rejoice in those words. I didn't want to hear them. Do you know, the same week I got that cancer diagnosis, the Trometer family, the missionaries that our church supports, buried their son, 23-year-old son, who was killed in a car accident. And I had enough sense those days to say, and I will say the same thing now. I said the same thing to my son last night. I would rather have cancer in every inch of my body than to have to be burying one of my children or my grandchildren. Now, as I was going through my things, looking for illustrations to physically show you things to illustrate my points, I came across something that I didn't even know that I had. And when I came across this, I was so excited because only God could have put that there. I was working the day of Tim's funeral. I didn't go, but somebody gave me a program from that day. And I was kind of in a daze the whole month I was battling my cancer. And just kind of put stuff away in a bag. And when I pulled this out, I was so excited. Only God could have planned this. The front of his program says, rejoicing in his presence. The whole program shows you that his parents, yes, they were weeping. They were sad that he left, but they knew that Tim was with them. The very final words on the back page say, though we grieve, Tim's up in heaven now saying, it's great up here. You all come on up now. What a godly example they set for others. And we need to rejoice with those that rejoice, but we also need to know how to weep with those that weep. The I in charity stands for intercede. Our pastor recently told us that as he goes into a series on prayer, he's going to be talking about intercessory prayer, which is a pleading prayer. Again, how many verses in the Bible can we find talking about prayer? How do I pick one? Well, I didn't pick one. I picked two. The first one is right on the wall here. It says, call unto me and I will answer thee and show thee great and mighty things which thou knowest not. Jeremiah 33:3, our theme verse for the year. I also like Colossians 1:9, and the last words of that verse are, do not cease to pray for you. How important that is in our lives. I recently had a friend who had surgery, and I'm rebuked because she came back to me later and said, Wendy, yours is the only card I got. The reason I'm rebuked is I didn't do it because I thought it was just a really neat thing to do. I needed to send her something else, and I went, oh, she just had surgery. Why don't I just stick it in a get well card? I, as I did it, did not realize how special that card would become because no one else did it. And I've got a bag full of cards, and I just recently went through them. I cried over them. Like I said, I was in a fog then. I was going through chemo. I was very sick. I was working full time. But now I'm looking at them, and I want to just share a very few things that I learned from it. One of the cards that I picked up has a verse on prayer on the front, 1 Peter 3:12. And on the inside, the manufacturer, it looks like handwriting, but it's from the manufacturer of the card. It says, I'm not sure what to do. I'm not sure what to say. But one thing for sure, I promise I will pray. And my friend that sent the card underlined the words, I will pray, and put an encouraging note at the end. How special things like that are. We never know how special or how needy a person is. And as I was looking for something else on my in my bag of goodies, I knew I had a special friend. I'd known her back in my Indianapolis days. We lived in different parts of the country for many years. We took a vacation right before I started my chemo, and I saw her for the first time in well over a decade. And I remembered once in a while getting a card from her, but as I was sorting through my bag of Get Well cards, I came across this entire stack. She must have sent me one every week. Encouraging words, talking about the birds in her yard, giving me Bible verses, words of encouragement, telling me, I'm praying for you. A couple cards here she sent different times, you're in my prayers, and then friendly notes. But the neatest thing is my friend Nancy went to a church. The goal of this church was to have a prayer chain 24/7. People signed up for an hour a week when they would pray for the requests that were sent in on a secure site. And their goal was to all week long have somebody every other hour of the day praying for these requests. And she told me she was putting me on that prayer list, and I thanked her very much. But you know, I started getting, and here again is a stack of notes from these people. They not only took the time to pray for me and many other people on the hour they prayed each week, they put an expensive stamp on. Some of them wrote special notes. One of them in particular, this family, they said, you know, we're praying for you. And they knew, they got updates on my condition, where I was. Those people in Ohio knew more about my condition than some of the people I crossed paths with every day of the week. And it was such a blessing to me. But one family, they said, oh, I hope you get through the next whatever successfully. And then they said, our daughter is going to be start the very same thing. And I thought, this family is going through a crisis in their own life. And yet they took the time to pray for me and to send me a note and encourage me. And I know they did this for many other people. It wasn't just me. What a blessing that was. And then I came up with one more illustration just before I came. As I was getting nervous about speaking to big people instead of little people, I opened my emails, and there was an email from a friend at church that wasn't able to be here tonight. But she sent me the sweetest email telling me that she would be praying for me. Again, rebuke. I thought, man, I get ready to come to ladies' fellowships, and I'm worried about getting my treats ready and getting my shower taken and getting dressed. And instead of that, she took the time to send me an encouraging email, and what a blessing that is. The T in charity represents time. And I know time is running low, and time is something that we're all sensitive to. Again, I want to say some of us have more dispensable time than others to do for others, but we need to set our priorities and make sure we're making time to do the things that God would want us to do. Ephesians 5:16 says, redeeming the time because the days are evil. In May, when I did a quick snippet at our ladies' fellowship on being a grandparent, I had just buried my father. And I mentioned that as people eulogized him, as the grandchildren one by one stood up, they didn't talk about the neat bicycle Grandpa gave him or the neat gifts or the money he passed to him. He didn't, because he didn't have any. But they talked about the time. Grandpa taking me fishing. Grandpa doing this. And what a blessing it was. And I've decided, and as I've changed my priorities, as I've come through trials in my life, I know that one of the legacies I want to leave my children is a legacy of time. I want to leave it to my children, my grandchildren. That's why I carry pictures of things that we've done. The couple weeks ago when my daughter-in-law called and said, let's take the girls to the Dells, I was there. I was spending time with them. I've got pictures to show it. And after I brag and show people these pictures, each of my seven grandchildren has a photo album that I'm putting pictures into. And so if there were things that they were too young to remember or things they just happened to forget, they can go through these books and they can remember the times that we spent with each other. And I know time is getting away, but just along with it, it yields dividends. A couple little grandma stories. The day after we got back from the Dells, Gretchen called and said, you got to hear this. And in the background, Paige, who is not quite three, who calls me Lala for some reason, was looking at a book, but she was singing You Are My Sunshine, and she kept saying over and over again, please don't take my Lala away. And how that gripped my heart, how special that was. Her 15-month-old sister, who has a very limited vocabulary, doesn't call a telephone a telephone. She calls it a hi, Lala, because that's what she hears her sister say when she's holding one. She went down the aisle of the telephone aisle of a store recently and went, hi, Lala, hi, Lala, hi, Lala, hi, Lala. That's what it is to her, and what a blessing it is to me to know that they're associating things with me. But our families need our time. Our friends need our time. The Allens, as Opie and I were down there visiting with Courtney in that small room where she is 24/7, she said, some days I just stare at the screensaver on the television. And then it's a nice picture of fish, but I'm sure it would get old really fast. And they appreciate the time that people can take going down there. The Beckets are so good about going to the nursing home and visiting with Hazel. There are multitudes of things we can do. When we take meals to people, it takes our time. And as I took to the Whites the other day, and she was lamenting the fact that she is so laid up and she can't do these things. But I said, God knows what we are able to do. And I encouraged her to. I said, you know, you can pray for other people. You can't get up, you can't make meals, and you can't even get out to church. But God knows, and you can only do what you're capable of. And the last letter of the word charity is a Y, and that represents being yielded to Christ. Romans 6:13 says, and as I look to that, just a moment here, Romans 6:13. Neither yield ye your members as instruments of unrighteousness unto sin, but yield yourselves unto God as those that are alive from the dead, and your members as instruments of righteousness unto God. What a great verse. In a quote I found in my notes, my notes in my Bible, that goes along with it. The quote says, the closer we come to Christ, the more love we will show to others. We need to yield ourselves to Christ, and we can show love to others. We started our lesson with a C, the ultimate love, Christ's love, God's love to us. But now we have come a full circle. And again, the climax is being reminded of God's love to us. We need to be yielded to God and show charity to others in many different ways. Hopefully, we have all been reminded of practical things we can do to show Christ's love to others. Let me end by reading the last verse of 1 Corinthians 13, the love chapter. 1 Corinthians 13:13 says, and now abideth faith, hope, charity, these three. But the greatest of these is charity.